Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
And now live in this studio, it's the All Paws Pet Talk call-in radio show with a valuable knowledge and expertise of our panel guests ready to take your calls. Listen for the phone number so you may call in live. Take it away, panel.
Hello and welcome to today's edition of the Annie G Pet Show. I am here with Brian Patrick Clark, the man with three first names. And Brian, I bet you are glad you're not living in Connecticut now, aren't you?
I'm very glad, but I haven't lived in Connecticut in a long time, so I still have friends there, and my thoughts obviously have been with them, and actually have family there, because Carrie, our older son's wife's parents, live right on the shore in Madison.
Oh.
Yeah,
oh,
right
boy.
On the shore.
Okay, so let's just first say to all the people out there, we obviously feel your pain living in Florida. We go through hurricanes, but I said to someone, the nice thing for us is when we go outside in a hurricane, it's about 75, 80 degrees, not 40.
No.
Because I would not do well with that.
And those images out of West Virginia with the blizzard that they've
Yeah,
had.
That's incredible. I guess good for the ski slopes. Let's look at the positive.
Oh, okay, good. There we go.
So one of the things we're going to look at, because ironically there can be an explosion after an event like this, is how all the various parasites take advantage.
Why are you looking at me when you said that?
Oh, yeah, that's true. All right.
Yeah, suddenly you glanced over at me like the operative word, parasite.
I just haven't seen you so
far.
Yeah,
thank you. Okay, I get it.
So we are actually very pleased to be talking with Dr. Elizabeth Hotchkins, and she is the Director of Vet Services from SIVA. And SIVA is a company that have a lot of various veterinary products. The one we're going to look at today is Vectra 3D, which covers, Brian, what? You don't know, do you?
It covers, you know what? Well, it covers the things that Vectra 1 and 2D didn't cover.
There you go. No, it always came up with 3D. So let's, without more ado, go and say welcome to Dr. Elizabeth Hotchkins. Thank you so much for joining us. We do appreciate that.
Well, thanks for the invitation. I'm happy to be with you.
And, all right, let's just keep Brian interest peaked here. Why is it called Vectra 3D?
This particular topical product is directed at, it is specifically for dogs, all right, so that's the D, and 3 designates that there are 3 different actives working together in this particular topical product to deliver, we think, the most comprehensive protection against ectoparasites that dogs and throughout the United States are exposed to, and most notably ticks. And you're so right about ticks being a problem, a disease-carrying, disease-causing problem around the entire calendar these days.
Right, because a lot of people think, oh, it's colder. Now, of course, our definition of cold, as I know that you are based in California, so you have the same definition of cold as we do. Anything
That's
below
right.
70 is now freezing. And so our clients think they don't have to use it. But we notice that the worst months in the southeast Florida areas are November and March, and particularly November through December. So what are some of the causes that you may think that you weren't having a problem with ticks and now you suddenly are? What can be some of the reasons why that's happening?
Well, certainly we know that different species of ticks will get out and look for their hosts to get their blood meals at different times of the year. Ticks are really, really smart little critters, and they have evolved the capability to occupy an environment in a kind of a tag team fashion so that everybody gets their shot. Isn't that cool? Evolution is an interesting process. And so right now, we have the Lone Star tick, which does affect Florida by every estimation of the parasitologist. There's plenty of Lone Star ticks down in Florida, and they are out questing. Their larvae forms are questing right now in the southeast part of the United States. Other ticks are going a little bit dormant, not because of weather so much, but just because they're sharing the environment with other species. But there is really no month of the year anywhere in the United States anymore where we can say reliably you're not going to be exposing your dog to ticks if he or she is out running around in tall grass, in wooded areas, or brushy areas.
So now I know that people like to avoid using chemicals whenever they can, but, I mean, does the tick have any natural predators out there that's going to keep it down to a manageable level?
Or even unnatural ones,
or unnatural,
if it'll just take care of the things, right?
Well, certainly ticks have some predators. You know, birds will eat ticks. Chickens like to eat ticks. They'll eat ticks that are in the barnyard, and that's sort of an observation that farmers have made for centuries, that birds will go after ticks as part of their menu, but certainly not us. Ticks are incredibly prolific. One female tick can produce tens of thousands of eggs in her lifetime, and her lifetime may be anywhere from a few months to several years. So they've got us very much outnumbered. There is no way that we can, without enhanced technologies, which do include safe, I'll use the term chemicals because you did, Annie, but unfortunately the word chemicals does have a bad connotation in society today, but the reality is the bugs and the diseases they can transmit are way, way, way more dangerous for all of us, you, me, and our pets, than are the chemicals that the EPA allows us to use to try to fight them back.
And my understanding is one of the diseases that is a zoonotic disease, in other words, that's something that people can catch from animals as well, is Lyme's disease, is actually becoming more prevalent, not less.
Well, yeah, and Lyme isn't a zoonotic in the traditional sense. You know, probably the best example of a zoonotic disease would be something like rabies, because that is, you know, transmitted directly from an animal to a human being, and then the human being, of course, has a life-threatening potential for disease. With Lyme disease, the reservoirs in the wild definitely maintain the infection, but typically your dog, if your dog becomes infected with Lyme disease or has a tick that is transmitting Lyme to the dog is not then going to turn around and infect the human. So it's a little bit different kind of peril for human beings, and dogs have been considered for decades now, since we've known about Lyme disease, they're a sentinel, if you will, a sort of a mine canary in various areas of the country for whether there is Lyme disease that can affect humans. Where we see dogs being more and more affected, we know that there are more and more ticks that can infect people.
So sentinel, you mean that they're a warning, a watch system,
yes,
effectively, because it will reveal itself first in the canine population.
Correct. Generally, we start seeing dogs be infected with a particular disease like Lyme, and then we know that the ticks carrying it are out there and they can bite people.
Do you know, I think that's the most sensible question I've heard Brian ask ever.
I love the repartee between you two. It's great.
Well, thank you, Doc. I'm pouting. I'm pouting now.
Listen, Dr. Hodgkins, we do thank you. I want to point out again, you are the Director of Veterinary Services for SIVA, and the product Vectra 3D, which is available through veterinarians only, and there is a reason for that, folks. We actually took part in the trials when it first came out, so I will definitely stand behind its efficacy 100%. So I should point out, not only does it affect ticks or kills ticks, but also fleas and repels things like sandflies and mosquitoes.
And on that note, I'd like to say, I'll stand by you.
There we go. See, it's time for a break because I need to beat him up again. Dr. Hodgkins, have a wonderful day out there in California. And thank you so much.
You,
I know that we'll be speaking to you on some of the other products that you actually have.
Thank you, Doc.
Nice talking with you, Brian, too. Bye-bye.
And that's about the first time anybody's been pleased to talk to you, Brian.
She had her fingers crossed when she said
it. Well, I wonder what you were going to say then. So, listen, we're going to go to a break right now. But do not go away, because when we come back, we've got some top tips on training. And that was very hard to say. We'll see you in a minute.
Can't wait. I'm hungry, I'm hungry, tastes great, I love food. I'm hungry, can't wait, I'm hungry, lick the plate, I'm hungry.
Is your dog or cat a finicky eater due to health problems, old age, or just fussiness? Super Gravy by Clear Conscience Pet will boost your pet's appetite and nutrition for less than 40 cents a day. If you are adding expensive canned food to kibble to get your pet to eat, Super Gravy is the earth-friendly alternative with no canned waste and for less than half the cost. Visit supergravy.com for more info and bring pure joy back to your companion's mealtime. Save 20% now at supergravy.com. Just enter radio at checkout. Try Super Gravy by Clear Conscience Pet. Your pet will love you for it.
I'm hungry, tastes great, I love food. I'm hungry, can't wait, I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry, tastes great, I love food.
Hello, welcome back. I'm sorry I'm laughing because I wanted to say, and I'm going to try and say it again, but you put a thought in my head and I'm going to, it's going to come out wrong.
Top
tips on training.
You've got to stop saying right, that on
because
air, Annie.
That's not what you said during the break. So we are thrilled, are we not?
Oh, I am. I am.
To be speaking with Martin Dealey, we sound like we're being sarcastic, but we don't.
No, we're not. No, in that regard, we are thrilled. But I'm also thrilled about those top tips.
Okay, good. Because as you know, Martin is a very, very world-renowned dog trainer.
And he's also a very engaging personality,
he
which
is
an unusual combination.
And for me, he is from England.
Give
so
up, you two. Good grief.
How big is that head now, Martin? Will you fit through the door when next you visit?
So, that's listen, right. Martin, I listen, you two just shut up. It's my show, all right? It's the Annie G Pet Show. That means I'm running it, okay?
We
now,
rule the world.
Let's get serious because I know that a lot of people have problems training their dogs. Now, what I'm about to say, I said on my very first TV show, and it was live, and it was one of the worst things I should have ever said, because as it came out of my mouth, I thought, oh, no, I should never have said that.
Right.
And what I actually said was, you need to find out what turns your dog on. I will not say that this time to Martin.
Well, some of us already know what turns our dogs on, so we don't need to find out. It makes it so much easier.
I know that Martin's going to get me out of a hole on that one. What exactly did I mean with that statement, Martin? And this is rated, you know. Family listening.
I think it's like it is with people, though, to some extent. You know, there are certain things that we enjoy doing. And there's no doubt about it that, I mean, I used to have a little terrier when I first started with dogs. I was 11 years old. And he used to love to actually play kill, if you like, if it was a ragger or something like that. Or in those days, we didn't have all the posh toys that we have today. But he loved to shake things and really kill it, you know. And then you get others like, I'm in with retrievers, and people say, oh, he's always picking something up. Well, that's what retrievers do, you know. They like to carry things. And I've got a little dog right next to me here, and she's just got a big fluffy toy in her mouth, and she's asleep. They like to do certain things. So when you're working with a dog and when you want to create a relationship with a dog, it's rather nice to find out what turns that dog on, as you say. And I've got a dog in for training at the moment, and I'm not quite sure what he is, but the way he walks and the way he looks, it looks like a greyhound. And so, to be honest, I've got him chasing things. He doesn't want to pick them up, but he loves to chase. So
well, they like chasing cats.
Or I put him into a down and throw something, off he goes. He loves it.
Maybe your neighbor can give you a cat or two, because I know they like to do that.
No, I've got to tell you, I'm just thrilled that Martin gave us the answer he did, because I had this dread fear of hearing about dogs' erogenous zones or something.
No. You can sit over there and think about that all you want, because it's not happening. So, Martin, let's look at
that's the other program we run.
Yeah, that's the other show. That's the After Midnight show. Martin, let's look at a couple of scenarios. The first being someone has a small, fluffy puppy, a Maltese, a Shih Tzu, and they want to find out, well, what is it that actually turns this dog on? So how do you find out? What do you do?
I spend time with him. You know, when I've got a little puppy, one of the things that they will always like to do is to carry something of yours, or they're interested by something of yours. You know, usually it's something that's distasteful, like good old worn socks, or even worse. But many times when I've got puppies of that nature, I'll roll up an old sock that I've got, one that I've worn the day before, and I'll knot it up, and I'll see whether they're interested in it. You put things in. If you think about it, though, if you put too many toys in there, they're not really interested to see it all the time. But if you've got something which really they enjoy smelling, or they enjoy tasting, or they enjoy putting in their mouth, or they enjoy chasing in some way, and then take it away, and that becomes, if you like, the highlight. It becomes a relationship-building thing with you, because you're actually doing something with them. You're getting them to work. So when you've got these little dogs, like when I get a puppy, or even if I breed some litter of puppies myself, when they're very, very young, I'm just sitting on the floor with them, I'm watching them, and I'm playing with them, and I'm doing things with them with different kinds of toys and items, if you like to think about it that way.
Now, do you believe in using treats for training motivation?
It does help, but what you've got to do is to phase it out. I mean, I have no problem at all with using a little treats. You've got to be careful you don't overfeed them and give them diarrhea or something like that. But there's nothing wrong with using, and I mean very small treats. Some of the treats you buy from the shops are huge for puppies. And then owners are saying, he does need his dinner. And I say, do you give him any treats? And they say, yes, I give him only about three or four, though. And I say, show me. And they bring out these kind of bony things, which are about twice the size of the dog, you know. So really what I'm saying with treats is make them small. And to get them to sit or to come up to you and things like that is nice. But you've got to be in charge. You've got to be actually showing the little dog nicely what to do. And even when you're using food, you've got to know exactly how to give them the food and how to allow them to take it from you. So
now,
I don't mind.
What about the scenario?
All, but I phase them out, you know. I phase them out, and I find myself, when I get dogs here in training, if I can get them to retrieve and to enjoy a tennis ball or something of that nature, they're not bothered about the food. They want to actually work. They love the work.
Right, same with mine. So now what if you've adopted an older dog, you know, maybe as much as 8 years old, that doesn't look like it's done much? How are you going to go about that particular scenario? I was thinking of Brian. I'm wondering whether Brian is too late to train now or not.
Yeah, way too late. And I don't look like I've done much. I have to agree.
Yeah, well, Brian's definitely past it.
It's quite
interesting. You always start with just the little moves towards what you want. Sometimes I've got dogs, and I'll tease them with something. It might be a soft toy, it might be rolled-up socks, it might be something like that, and I'll throw it. And often they'll want to go and kind of run out to it and see what it's about, but they might not pick it up. But the moment they run out to it and they touch it with their nose, if you say, good, and then they come back to you and play them, and very quickly you tend to find that those little things build up. Until all of a sudden you've got a dog that's not just running out, but actually, you know, we get very upset because they pick it up, they come back halfway, and they drop it. Well, as far as I'm concerned, they've picked it up and they've succeeded in bringing it back halfway, not failed in bringing it back the other halfway. So I say good to that. I call them up to me. The important thing is to come back to me, and then we'll play again. And I stop before they get bored. With some dogs, it might be two or three little games. With some, it might be only one before they kind of get bored with it. But you build it up, and it becomes, if you like, the highlight. And there's a lot of little things that you can do. There's so many toys out there nowadays with raggers and tuggers and squeakies. And I'm not a big squeaky lover, but sometimes squeakies will get them going because they like the idea of the noise, you know.
Right. And, you know, I wanted to tell you something, Martin, because I've been emailing to you about another project that I hope we can work on. And this was fascinating to me because we had a family of foxes that built a den on our property, had five kits, I believe that's correct terminology for fox cubs, and raised them. And I went down to the den and I found tennis balls, the dog's soft toys. And those foxes, the adult foxes, had come up to the house, gone in the garage, stolen the dog's toys and taken them down to the den. So there is that spirit of play even in a wild animal. There's no other purpose for them taking them down there.
Well, first of all, it smells of you or smells of something which is interesting. But if you think about it with every dog, if we're going to get feeding them this nice kibble or raw food or anything like that, what a dog has to do, he has to find game. He has to actually put that game out where he can catch it. He has to chase it. He has to catch it. He has to kill it. When he kills it, it might eat a little bit of it, but many times it's to take it back to the family. What's this fox doing with a tennis ball? similar kind of thing. But I'm doing the things with that, with the Labradors or with the Retrievers or with the Terriers or with any dog that comes in. I've got a great little dog. I have the foggiest idea what he is. And he just loves retrieving. He enjoys every bit of it. But you're putting their natural instincts together into the form of a game and then controlling it.
And Annie forgot to tell you that she now has a family of foxes living there, growing fur that is not dissimilar in tone to neon yellow felt.
No, not at all. Listen, Martin, as always, it's been a pleasure to speak to you. I do hope we can do a segment very regularly, because I think we're on the same page on training issues. And I know you're the best.
We always were, darling.
So, listen, thank you, and have a great rest of the week. And we'll look forward to maybe speaking to you next week, all right?
I look forward to it. Next week I'm running a workshop, so make it the week after.
All right, week after. All right, thanks, love.
I've got trainers coming here to train with me and learn some gems.
There you go. See, he's a busy man. All right, Martin, we'll speak to you then.
Be well, Martin.
You have been listening to
you, Brian. Thank you so much. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. You are listening to the Annie G. Pet Show. Not that you have been. Well, you have been and you're going to.
And you're
so
going to.
Do not go away.
No.
Because we've got an update on a very special dog that we featured a couple of weeks ago. And we're going to tell you all about what happened to that dog, Trip. We'll speak to you soon.
And it's great if my dog wants to sleep on the bed with me all night.
Scratch it. Is your itchy dog allergy sad? Did you know that our dogs suffer from the same pollen, dust mite, and mold allergies that we do? Now, veterinarian dermatologist Dr. Christian has formulated Doggy Goo. Doggy Goo is a peanut butter treat for your dog. But Doggy Goo also sublingually builds tolerance to 10 pollens, 2 mites, and 3 molds 100% naturally. Try Doggy Goo. Your dog will Doggy Goo look it up. Call 855-246-2426. The number again is 855-246-2426. Or on the web, www.healthygoo.com. Goo spelled G-O-O.
Scratch it.
What is this show? This show is a compilation of a bunch of idiot stuff that Brian and I come up with, and then a lot of good guests.
A compilation. A compendium.
Compendium.
Not
okay.
To be confused with compost.
Education with an entertaining flair.
Yes.
So, do you
like that flair.
Do you remember, Brian?
Like
we spoke to a wonderful young gentleman by the name of Jorge Alvarez.
I do.
And he had adopted a young dog, 1 year old dog called Trip.
Right.
And found out subsequently that Trip needed a major orthopedic surgery.
Yes.
Which we could not help him with down here.
Right.
And in fact, he was going to go to the university or a specialist, and that was going to cost mucho bucos.
Yes.
All right?
Yes.
And so George had heard about this wonderful program and where you basically put out the dog's story on YouTube and
right.
Facebook and all the social media things, and you set up a Chip In account, so Chip In for Trip.
Chip for Trip, right.
And he needed to raise, I think, around $1,700.
Yeah.
And I thought we would do a follow-up and see what happened on that, because I want anybody out there, like we've just had a client being told they need to go for a specialist surgery that unfortunately, again, it's one of the few we can't do, and it's going to set them back $7,000. And this is an older couple who I know are going to struggle. I want to know how successful is this program so that we can at least give that information to people so that
story.
They may not be faced with the horrible dilemma, do I put the dog to sleep or do I try and raise some money?
Right.
So, Jorge, good morning. Welcome back to the show, or good afternoon if you're listening in one of those places. Thank you for coming. What happened with Trip and how did the fundraising go?
Well, Annie, I'm happy to say that the fundraising was a huge success. And in just a matter of 2 to 2.5 weeks, we were able to raise roughly $1,400 for his procedure. And about a week and a half ago, he had the procedure at University of Florida, and everything went excellently. He's recovering very well. And I'm really, really appreciative to everybody who chipped in. I couldn't really have asked for more.
So now, how fast did this start working? I mean, you posted, I know you did a video, I saw that, you posted that on the appropriate places, which luckily for you, you're good at that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But how long before you first saw money?
I saw money within the first few hours. Within, 4 hours, there was already $100 in the account. And within a day or two, we were already $200, $300 in. And, of course, it's very exponential. At the beginning, it grows very fast, and then it tapers off. But the big thing is to keep, putting updates on Facebook, let people know how he's doing, keep people in the loop. So they always have him on their mind, and they want to share the story with other people. So definitely I saw a very, very fast response, and it was really overwhelming. And, of course, I had to thank everybody individually, and I was really overwhelmed at the beginning, but I got the hang of it later. So,
really, on average, what is the donation that people give?
I would say the average donation, even though I asked for $1 donations, the average was about $20. And I even got, donations from somebody. Someone donated from Israel. They donated $3. And the biggest donation was about $150. So the range was between $1 and $150, with the average being $20. So big range there.
And was this people you generally knew? Or, was it a lot of them? Obviously, I'm assuming the one in Israel you didn't know. But were you surprised that there was some people you just never even heard of?
Yeah, completely surprised. I would say about 80 to 90% of the donors were people had not seen, met, or heard of before. They just heard his story through online media and word of mouth. So it's like very, very few people were ones that I knew personally or had even heard of. So,
and I just have to say that what I find so extraordinarily impressive is that the vast preponderance of people are still struggling or very uncertain about their own financial future. I find it extraordinary that you got that kind of a response, much less one so swift. I'm delighted you did, obviously.
Yeah, and people understand, everybody in this day and age is needing in some way or another, some people financially. And, those people who gave $1 were extraordinary because, the fact that they logged on and took the time to read the story and gave $1 and probably spread the word to other people was just, more than I could have ever asked for. Any little bit was extremely helpful.
So one more time, George, before we go, and I know I've really interrupted George at a bad time, Brian, because he's studying for his finals of veterinary medicine examination.
Rock and roll,
so
George.
Very tense week for him. But just one more time, for people listening out there, if there's anybody who is facing what might be an extraordinary medical bill coming up for their pet, or indeed, if you want to chip in for my Christmas party, there's always that option.
I'm giving my buck.
No, yeah, that's all you're going to give too, right?
I'll give you two.
A buck towards the Christmas party. Okay. Can you just explain how you go about doing this?
Yeah, so I don't want to promote any one particular company or trademark out there, but just from my experience, I had success using YouTube to spread the video, Facebook to update people on his story and post pictures, chip in and PayPal to receive the donations. And those were pretty much the biggest ones that helped. And, of course, word of mouth, but online firms, those were the four websites that really, really made this possible.
Awesome. Listen, George, I will you get back to your studying, which I know you're very good at doing. And yeah. I just wanted to say thank you. We're thrilled that Tripp managed to get his chips and have that surgery done. And we wish you and Tripp all the very best. And I'm sure we'll be calling you for other reasons in the near future, okay?
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much.
That's great.
That's not a bad idea for the Christmas party, is it?
No, it's not a bad idea. It's a great idea.
There are going to be some people out there that actually believe me.
Okay. I'm going to start soliciting $1 donations for your Christmas party.
The amount of people you have.
I was going to say, you'll probably have $5 within about 5 months.
There you go. Listen, before we go, I wanted to, we're kind of talking about getting things on YouTube and pictures of this, that, and the other. I can't stress how important it is, Brian, that you take a picture of yourself and your pets. Not Kathy, that's your wife. All right?
I'm so glad you said that. I'm thinking, is there any particular place in which I'm supposed to take a photo of myself
because,
and post it online?
In cases like hurricanes, like Sandy, these right. animals are getting separated, and if they're not microchipped, that will be your biggest form of identification. When someone says, no, that's my dog, you'll be saying, no, here is my dog. This is the picture, and I can't tell you how many...
Can't tell you how right you are. I had Kathy microchipped early on in our relationship.
Yes, there you go. That was just in case she wanted away from you, right?
Yes.
So remember that. I know you may not think you're going to have a natural disaster coming your way, but time has proven that that's not always the case. So take a picture of yourself with the pet. That has actually been a good point of evidence in court cases over ownership of pets.
Except if you have to go against the dream team, because they'll insist that that pet that happens to look exactly like that pet that you had isn't really that same pet.
Right, that's true.
Yeah,
so,
there you go.
But it is a good thing. The other good thing that came out of Sandy, by the way,
right.
was all the dead rats.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah.
you know, those flooded through, which, of course, people are going to be horrified to know that those were actually there in the first place. But I don't know if you recall, not that you were there at the time, and neither was myself, but during the fire, Great Fire of London.
I was going to say, are we going back to Hamlin?
We are. We're going back to 1666 and the Great Fire of London. That is what broke the plague cycle, because the rats were killed that were, had the fleas. So
yeah.
it'll be a good thing. But have you seen the pictures of how many rats are coming up? It is
no, I haven't.
Not pleasant.
Glad to know that there was some quote-unquote good news in this horror, because it really, the pictures of devastation are just unbelievable.
They are. I think everybody didn't believe it was going to be as bad as it is. But the good news is a lot more shelters now will also take pets in, whereas back when we had the three hurricanes, do you remember Charlie
yeah,
and Gene and something else?
We had just moved here 3 weeks before.
Right, they actually wouldn't
begin
take.
On Friday the 13th of August, you'll recall. That was
yes,
the first.
I actually went out to buy beer just before it hit the house.
English people always buy beer. Every occasion. Celebrating, mourning, you know, preparing.
Well,
got to get that brew.
The power went out.
Yeah, I'm Irish. I understand.
It went out for a week. You know, I mean,
brew. Got to have your brew.
That's right.
And with an English background, it doesn't even need to be cold.
But, you know, that was quite a traumatic time. Anyway, you are listening to the Annie Cheap Pet Show. I'm trying to settle down here because
we're actually
going to be looking at some really wonderful stories. We've talked about dogs being rescued by Sandy in Sandy's aftermath, I should say. We're going to be talking to Karen about dogs that have rescued other people. See, we're going to end on a good, positive note. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
If my dog wants to sleep on the bed with me all night.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Get in on the fun and the rewards of caring for animals as a professional. Train to be a pet groomer or a veterinary assistant at the Florida Institute of Animal Arts. Turn your love for animals into a lifelong career. There are thousands of jobs in the growing professions of pet groomer and veterinary assistant. We help place graduates. Ask about tuition financing. The Florida Institute of Animal Arts, Winter Park, 407-869-PETS. On the web at myfiaa.com.
Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has, or you suspect they might have, an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a healthcare provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
And now live in this studio, it's the All Paws Pet Talk call-in radio show with a valuable knowledge and expertise of our panel guests ready to take your calls. Listen for the phone number so you may call in live. Take it away, panel.
Hello, You're back on All Paws Pet Talk Radio with your host, Deb Wolf. And today we have Jill Gruder, and she's calling to us from Hampton, New Hampshire, where she says it's not so bad today. And she's with ProjectPositive.com. Project Positive. So let's find out about Project Positive. Welcome to the show, Jill.
Thanks, Deb. I appreciate it.
What do you do? What's Project Positive? It's a great name.
Thank you. We're a 501c3 nonprofit, and we renovate animal shelters in need. So we're kind of like the extreme home makeover for the animal world.
Wow. How does somebody get nominated to be on your list?
We have, if people go to our website, which is PAWSITIVE, so like a paw, projectpositive.com, shelters can go in through our application process, but I mean, Deb, we get emails from all over the place. We usually concentrate in New England and New York, and especially given the circumstances of the Hurricane Sandy, that's definitely where our help is going to be going over the next few months. Emails as far away from Australia, and we've been down to Tennessee and all of that kind of stuff, so the need is everywhere.
Where are you getting your money from? I mean, it must cost a fortune to renovate a shelter.
Well, that's hard. We definitely look to the public for help. They're so generous to us. It is definitely a struggle with every single renovation for us. I've applied to a couple of grants recently, and I'm just crossing my fingers that we get them, especially given what's happened with the storm. We do have one sponsor, Pet Life, and they are a New England-based store with some really high-quality foods and all of that kind of stuff. And they were able to help us with our last renovation in Salem, New Hampshire. But it really is renovation to renovation, so we look to the public to help us be able to do this. It is tough, but we do everything we can, and somehow each renovation works out.
I was watching just about 2 weeks ago this show called Tabitha's Takeover, and she usually takes over hair salons, but this particular time she took over a doggy daycare, and they gutted it, and they fixed it, and they trained the staff, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. But I was thinking as they were doing this, in fact, I didn't know I was going to have you on the show, but I was thinking this would be a lot harder to do if it wasn't a doggy daycare, if it was actually a shelter or a kennel, because there's rules. How much cement, sloping surfaces, non-porous surfaces, all the stuff that keeps your dog safe and not full of germs when they're away. How do you keep up with all that?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And a lot of times, especially with the New England shelters, a lot of our shelters are taking a lot of animals from southern states who are very overwhelmed with the amount of rescues they take in. And a lot of the rescues come up to New England every single weekend. And so the shelters who do have that, who are taking in those intakes, they have to actually have an isolation area approved by the state, for these dogs until they get medical clearance. So we have to understand those rules and regulations. We work with building inspectors. We have electricians and general contractors on our team who are up to date with all of the codes. But it's really a matter of working very closely with the shelter and the state in which we're renovating to make sure that we do everything specifically to what's required.
I think people probably don't understand this. Like, you think, well, how complicated could it be? It's just a couple of cages. Well, actually, the dogs that you're talking about, the ones who've just come up from the south, can't breathe or spit on the other dogs. So they have to be
that separate. That's absolutely right.
You know?
Yeah.
Really
that's
separate.
Yeah, it is really different. We worked on a greyhound rescue last fall, and there was actually a separate entrance that we had to make as well. And the rule is that the dogs who are from New England who have been medically cleared and the dogs that were coming from transport, their paws couldn't even touch the same surface. So there are a lot of elements that are required. It is definitely not an easy feat. It's not something that you can just go in and do. It takes an awful lot of planning. You know, but we've been doing this for 3 years, struggling to get the money to do it, but doing it for 3 years, and, we make sure that we do everything that's required. That's our number one priority.
Yeah, because these shows, when you see them go in and do the makeover, a lot of times it's just paint, you know, it's just cosmetics, a bunch of new pillows, and they kind of change a chair around or something. You're talking huge. Like, you must have to go. Where do the animals go when you do it?
So if it's a large renovation, what they try to do is they adopt out and put in dogs and cats into foster homes. The renovation that we just did in Salem, we were able to do a 4-day renovation, and so they're in 4 separate mobile units, so we were able to move the animals around safely. A horse rescue that we worked on, luckily the majority of the work was exterior, the roof, the electrical system down to the paddocks, the water. So it is complicated. It's in every case is different. When we were in Tennessee, we were actually making an entirely separate structure, just dedicated to cats, because as you know, there's just such an overpopulation of cats and so many of them need to be adopted. So that worked out well too, because the animals were able to still stay on site. But it's a matter of making sure that these shelters have, foster homes and we have sort of a plan in place beforehand to make sure that animals, number one, are safe and that we're able to work around that.
When you go in there, like, I'm a little confused because the shelters around here, most of them that I know, are really well run. The regulations are really tight. If they are a proper nonprofit, a certified nonprofit, then they're going to have to run by those regulations. There are some people who operate out of the goodness of their heart in their homes, little shelters and little rescues, and that's where I could see the regulations being broken. But these mainstream shelters, is it that they're overcrowded? Is it that they're old? Like, what is it that makes them need a reno?
So what's happening is, and we're finding it more difficult, with the struggling economy too, just like we do, these shelters are relying on public donations. And so when the economy goes down, their donations, unfortunately, animal rescues are probably the hardest hit. And so every dollar they get are going to the health and welfare of these animals. And so what happens that what we're finding is their facilities begin to deteriorate. And it's so saddening to see, because these volunteers are working just to the bone taking care of these animals, and they have their own hardships. So what we do is we go in, they don't have to, pay a dime. We go in and we fix the facility so that they don't have to think about it. It's not one more sort of concern for them, and all of their attention is continued to be on the animals.
Oh, that's so good. So I want people to be able to find you. You're on Facebook. How can they find you?
Yeah, so Facebook.com, Project Positive, PAWSITIVE. We have almost 10,000 fans, so that's awesome. And we have links to our website. We actually film every renovation that we do, because we think it's really important for people to see the shelters that are out there, ones that are right in their community, maybe that they don't know about, and really the importance of adoption, because, as you know, there are just amazing animals out there who would love to be in a home. And so our goal is to just make their lives, when they're in this sort of transition period, as comfortable as possible. So we are on Facebook, Twitter. We have a great website. People can go to our YouTube page from our website.
That's great. I can't wait to look up the footage. I love seeing these little takeovers. I love seeing how good it is. And when there's animals involved, it's going to give you a really good feeling to see the end result.
Yes.
So everybody, check it out on Facebook. Jill, maybe you can go to my site to me on Facebook, Deborah Wolf Pet Expert, and put up a link there so people can find you real easy. I do that for the guests that I really like.
I will.
Such a good difference. And thank you for coming today.
Thanks, Deb. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Okay.
Okay.
Stay tuned, everybody, to All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
Does your dog have muddy, dirty paws? Well, here's your answer. The Paw Wash cleans dog's paws fast and easy. Just insert your dog's paw and leg into the device and pump up and down. The Paw Wash's unique hourglass design creates a suction of power that pulls that dirt, mud, sand, or salt off the paw and leg, and it stays in the device. You can clean all 4 paws in a little over a minute with just one fill. For retail or online sales, go to www.thepawwash.com. That's www.thepawwash.com.
Hello. Oh, we have nearly reached the end.
Hello, it's me.
Oh, no, please.
I've thought
seriously
about you.
I can keep you under a certain amount of control
yes,
at the beginning
can
of the show. By
you
the
can
end of the show, it's
oh,
all
yeah
unraveling like
the
a ball of
kick
wool.
In.
It is, heebie-jeebies. I do wish that the listeners could hear you during the break in some form, I didn't. Most of me thinks that would be a very bad idea indeed.
Yeah.
Because you have this... Are you sure you're not autistic at all? Suffer from.
I don't know if you mean that in the nicest way or whether.
Well,
it's
you can
a
take it
question
how it sounds, but I have never known anybody know the lyrics to so many songs. It's kind of. Are you on drugs? Should you be?
No,
on
I'm really
drugs
not. And the irony is, I never did drugs. Maybe I should have done drugs.
I think for everybody's sake, you should have done drugs. You're absolutely well, right. No, but
late
it's fascinating.
Is it too late to become a drug addict at 60?
No, now you just go to prescription things. It's so much more.
And we live in Florida. You don't even really need a legitimate prescription.
Tell me all of the nation.
Yeah,
so, listen, let us talk with the wonderful Karen
yes,
about
indeed
some nice stories. We, all you know, are switching on the news. We're hearing a lot of bad news coming out of New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Connecticut. Aren't you impressed with how I rattle off these states? I almost said counties there for one horrible God
we
moment
would have forgiven you.
But
the
you
accent
me
gives you clearance.
So
I was very proud of you for knowing all those states, and they're all even contiguous, and it sounds like you know.
You know what, Karen? You just stumped her with contiguous. Can we say a buddy?
Yeah. What? Oh,
a butt.
You call me a butt. So, Karen, tell us some nice stories, okay?
Of course, I would be happy to. You know, I am going to go off course and tell you today's dog of the day is actually from New Jersey. And he is a German Shepherd. And I know German Shepherds are dear to your heart, Annie.
Yes.
And he was in a shelter and going to be put down because they thought he was an aggressive dog. And this woman's friend said, you have to go see this dog. He's a beautiful shepherd. He doesn't have the normal, he's more of an all-over ticked gray. Not only did she end up realizing he was not aggressive, he was just barky when she brought her own dog to visit, but another person looked at him and said, you know, he'd be a really good search and rescue dog. If you'll foster him, we'll train it. And she ended up not only fostering him, adopting him, and now they work in search and rescue.
How wonderful. That's a great story.
Really great story.
That is a great story. So tell us some more great stories.
Well, you know, the good thing about this last storm is a lot of animals were more welcome in shelters. And I think not only because of last year's hurricanes, but because of last year's of Hurricane Irene that brought a lot of flooding to upstate New York and Vermont, a lot more shelters around knew what to do and knew that it was okay to let pets in shelters.
Yeah, funny enough, we were just discussing that before we came on with you, was the difference between the 2004 where we got hit by three hurricanes and now. So I know that we had a story in Florida a couple of weeks ago, and I should explain I've not been on the air because I had no voice, which would have meant Brian would have had to have done the entire show.
And that would have been insufferable.
I think
it would have been hysterical.
I think you're probably right. By the way, you know what I turn out to be highly allergic to? By highly allergic, I mean having a reaction of a rather staggering proportion.
That would be your co-host?
Well, that too. I hadn't thought of that. Tigers. So, I mean, who the heck?
Who would ever have thunk?
Who's allergic to tigers?
Well, you're just going to have to diminish your time around tigers, I guess.
And it started when, believe it or not, we were doing a spay on a full-grown tiger within our clinic.
Now, that sounds pleasant.
And I went into this, and as you know, I had absolutely no voice for 4 days.
No,
but anyway, a nice story from Florida, which me being the cynic I am, and I have a British sense of humor, which sometimes
it's
I don't
cryptic
think Americans don't get, was about the boy that wandered off where these four puppies saved him.
Yes, you know, I often think that, you know, every child should grow up with a dog. Well, this was a child with Down syndrome, so he doesn't have the sort of normal sensibilities that a child might have. And he wandered off, but had four puppies with him, and the puppies kept him warm. And, of course, he was the children with autism, and a lot of children with autism can relate to animals a lot better than people. And so they kept him warm and made noise when the rescuers were looking for him. And he was rescued because of the puppies.
And I don't want to make light of what could have been a serious situation. But basically, it sounds like he had at least one four-dog night. One is the loneliest number that you ever
I thought you were going to say something else. Because, here's the cynic in me.
Okay.
It turned out that
But you do know that was the origin of that phrase. Yes, okay.
The boy followed the puppies into the woods. So I believe this was a deliberate
So first the act. I get it. It was a setup. It was a hero complex thing among this group of four dogs.
The four dogs made a
conscious
decision.
How do we get the attention we crave by doing something noble?
They led the boy astray.
Lure him to his fate.
I think they were taking him down to eat him because then he lay down and they were all found around his neck. So you see, it was a plan.
Okay, so I well, wasn't sure what she said. I thought she said down to Eden, and I was thinking, in the Garden of Eden. But then I realized you said Eton.
It is a nice story.
Suppose you didn't want to go to a prep school in England.
Eton. It's a nice story, but...
That one, Annie got that, Karen. I just want you to know.
The reality is that he followed the puppies into the woods.
He did follow the puppies into the woods.
You know what
they always say when you're a child, they say, don't go with the man who says, do you want to see puppies? Because he's probably a predator. But they don't say, don't go with the puppies.
I'll tell you what worked for me with Kathy. I asked her if she'd like candy, little girl.
All right. Now, you're just going, now that's just low. People are going to think you're just creepy.
No, I'm not.
Creepy people.
Creepy.
Excuse me.
A creeple, you would call them.
A creeple, yeah. That's a good terminology. I like that one.
Yes, a creeple.
So, Karen, I know that you have another story, and I'm a little bit more inclined to believe the next.
Well, yes. You know, there's a Labrador Retriever.
Did you lose Karen?
I could still hear you.
Okay, no, we're all good.
No, I'm okay. Annie's good.
We've probably been censored.
Okay. You know, there's a Labrador Retriever named Bear, and he saved the family's 14-month-old child from drowning in the family pool. The baby's mother was doing some yard work, and she turned her head for a minute and realized she didn't see the child, whose name was Stanley, which is kind of an old man's name for a little boy. But
maybe the kid had thrown himself into the pool when he realized what his name was.
Not
trying to make light of it, but...
Bear, being a good Labrador Retriever, had dove into the pool and propped the child up and let the child rest on his belly so he could breathe above water. And that made enough commotion for the mother to come and get Stanley out. And he has suffered no ill effects from his brush with death due to the dog.
Though he's still horribly traumatized
with
the name.
Oh,
God. Let me ask you something, Karen, because I know the same question had to have popped up in Annie's mind. Knowing that there's a Labrador named Bear, is there a bear out there somewhere named Labrador?
I'm sure bears have names, but they're not ones that you could spell.
Okay.
Oh, that's true. So I do believe that story. I've seen that kind of thing happen, so... A little more than the other one, which I felt was, God everybody was okay.
Yeah,
and that's
Who were the Romulus and Remus and the wolves and
that's
that?
That's right, yes.
Yeah, you know.
Yes, I was raised by wolves in the jungle.
I don't doubt that.
He doesn't doubt that at all. So, Karen, did you specifically pick that pet of the day or dog of the day because it was from New Jersey?
I did not. We picked it before the storm, so...
Okay, well, because I was going to say, that's somewhat biased, then.
No, it's a great...
No, I'm just checking to make sure it's all kosher, you know, above board.
What would you know about kosher?
I don't know, absolutely
nothing. I mean, is there some Hasidic background that you haven't shared with us?
No, but I'm doing that... genealogy thing from National Geographic.
Very cool.
Listen, Karen, we're going to have to dash off here, for which you're profoundly grateful, and so are the audience. But as always, we are very grateful for the research you do, which is always so thorough and wonderful.
Thank you, Annie. Thank you, Brian. It was great to talk with you today.
And we will hear from you next week, where I will come up with some equally tasteless topics.
And I'll come back with the music. Equally badly done.
All right. Listen, everybody, you have been listening to the Annie G. Pet Show. I would like to say one final thing from Brian Patrick Clark and myself, and of course Karen, is... Cheerio.